Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
In Zen practice, there is a saying started many centuries ago, and it advises the practitioners, it advises everyone to avoid picking and choosing. Avoid picking and choosing. And another way to say that is don't discriminate. This saying reflects the Buddhist principle for a happy and peaceful and enlightened life. Well, it sounds good, but we all have to live in the everyday world, the daily world, and we have to make choices in our daily lives, because we do have responsibilities. We have responsibilities for the people we know and work with and live with. We have responsibilities for our activities. We have responsibilities for the things that we do and the things that we have to take care of. When we drive a car, we have responsibilities. When we shop at the supermarket, we have responsibilities. We have to make choices in our everyday life. And so in order to do it, we develop strategies for our life. Sometimes they are very intentional, and sometimes our strategies just sort of evolve naturally based on our experiences. We have particular strategies for choosing our actions and for choosing our words. We have strategies for what it is we do and say, and how we do and say things. And we also have strategies for choosing our relationships and for deciding what it is that we want to believe. So we are told to avoid picking and choosing, but it's hard to avoid it. And so many choices that face us every day, it can make us feel like we are living in a world of algebra, or a world of algorithms, where we have choices of either ones or zeros, this or that, either or. Choose this belief or that one, choose this brand or that one, choose this friendship and maybe not that one. Either or, this or that. That's how we navigate our daily life. But our spiritual practice encourages us to have a wider view of how we conduct ourselves. And this wider view includes accepting all things and all people. We are encouraged to consider everything and to not totally dismiss anything or anyone, even when we may feel discomfort. So, how can we reconcile these opposite ways of being, these opposite ways of being in the world? Imagine Planting a tree. And after a time, we become aware that this tree isn't doing very well. Its leaves may be yellow. Its fruit doesn't ripen or is no good. So what do we do? Do we blame the tree? Do we criticize the tree for not growing the way we had hoped? That, of course, would be kind of foolish. So if we're really serious about the well-being of this tree, we look around for causes for the problem. Or in other words, we try to understand the entire situation that the tree is living in. We consider the water, the light that it gets. We consider the condition of the soil. We look around to see if there are any pests harming the tree. And we look at the entire situation and all the factors that affect the tree. We do that so that we can take care of the tree. We don't just dismiss the tree and say, well, that didn't work. And the same thing is true of making bread. I think many of you have made bread before. And when we make bread, if after we knead the bread and let it sit for a while, maybe it doesn't rise. Or maybe it's all, soft and mushy. Do we blame the recipe in the bread book? Do we blame the author who wrote the recipe for the bread book? Well, we don't do that. We try to figure out what we didn't do right and how can we do it better the next time. But if a person that we know doesn't do well, very often we will blame or criticize that person. We don't treat that person the same way we would treat a tree or the loaf of bread that didn't rise. And why do we do that? It is because we hold each other responsible for our behaviors. And that's because we are trying to live in a cohesive community. We hold each other responsible for what we do and say. And this is a logical idea. It's based on the idea that every one of us has the capacity to think. We have intellectual capacity. And we want, and we assume that people will use their thinking capacity to its fullest extent, to its fullest extent. We want people to use their thinking capacity to its fullest extent and not be casual about that capacity. We want people to be good thinkers, to be rational, to have what we call common sense, to be ethical, to see a big picture, and to act in a communal way. And if other people don't do these things, we can become disappointed and sometimes even feel betrayed by other people. And this betrayal, this sense of betrayal, could lead to a desire to want to criticize and punish. And what it really means is that when that happens, when we have a tendency to criticize or want to punish someone, it means we are taking it personally. When people don't live up to our standards of using their thinking capacity, we take it personally. And this is a big problem that gets in the way of a cohesive community. All living creatures are problem solvers. Not just we humans, but all living creatures are problem solvers. To the smallest bird, to the smallest insect. And all living creatures, human beings and animals, fishes, birds, we all have the same problems in common, the same challenges in common. We have to determine how to survive physically. We have to determine how to mate and reproduce our species. And we have to learn how to take care of our offspring. And these problems are fundamental. They are the everyday survival challenges of all sentient beings. And we human beings are very well equipped to solve such problems. And we are equipped to be creative and to have a satisfying life because we have a thinking capacity. But we sometimes get caught in an additional problem, which is how to survive emotionally, how to survive spiritually. And this additional problem comes about when we take things personally. And it arises because we think, each of us think, that we are each something called a person. And this is where our teaching comes in. We think we are a something called a person. And then we start to think that who we think we are feels threatened by other people not using their capacity the way we would like. Or maybe we become concerned about how we want to be thought of. So we human beings often have a tendency to go on the attack when we feel emotionally threatened. And in many ways, we criticize, we punish, we avoid each other, and we slander. And this way of being in the world has been one of the characteristics of human nature since the very beginning of history. We have these tendencies. They're hidden and they smolder, and they can be awakened at any time if we feel emotionally threatened. The tree that doesn't do what we had hoped for is not a threat. Nor is the bread that doesn't rise. So it would be quite unusual to blame the tree. But to blame or criticize people is not unusual. if someone doesn't do what we hope for. Naturally, if someone commits a crime or presents a threat to harm others, we have to act. But we shouldn't be too quick to judge somebody else's words or somebody else's actions if they make us feel bad. We have to understand if what somebody else says or does constitutes a real threat or just an imagined threat that comes from our spiritual problem. So the problem of emotional survival is real only when there is real abuse. And that would occur when somebody selfishly and purposely takes advantage. But the problem for us human beings is that we will feel abused, or we will feel betrayed or threatened when it is not really so. And that happens when we are confused or deluded by who we think we are, or in other words, when we become attached to an image of ourself. Our very rational problem-solving ability can get all confused and mixed up when self-delusion arises, when we react without mindfully hearing other people. But criticizing does not help. Becoming angry does not help. And getting even does not help. To live a life free from that confusion, we have to understand what is going on. Just like when we consider the condition of the tree and the water and the light and the soil and the possible diseases. What is going on? We have to understand it before we respond to a situation, before we too quickly try to restrain someone with criticism or anger. And this is the foundation of our practice. Hearing and seeing what other people do and say before we respond. So rather than criticize or anger or dismiss someone's words or deeds, we can be more creative if we forgive. And forgiving is a much more satisfying response. Criticizing and expressing anger and avoiding others, slandering, doesn't make us feel good. Doesn't make anybody feel good. Accomplishes nothing. Forgiving is the most satisfying response. And that's true even when some kind of restraint is needed because someone becomes an actual threat to others. I've learned that Forgiving really means not taking things personally. We don't have to make an overt gesture or statement about forgiving, just simply not take it personally when somebody says or does something that's not in accord with what we think is the best way to behave or the best practice. Forgiving and not taking things personally is a reflection of our spiritual self, of our true self. Forgiving is how we embrace life. And the capacity to embrace our life in this way first requires confidence. The confidence that comes from knowing what and who we are inherently from an absolute and transcendental standpoint. And this kind of confidence is more than being, it's more than having confidence from being very competent in the world. And it's more than being competent from having a good reputation or from feeling good when people say nice things about us. These things don't last. True confidence, large confidence, can never be threatened because it is not emotional and it is not intellectual and it is not a delusion. So we practice and we sit so that we can reaffirm our true nature and feel our large self and feel our large confidence, which is very large, which has no limits. Our true self does not react to the disappointments in life in self-oriented ways. The true self does not take things personally because the true self knows there is no self to feel threatened. Our true nature trusts all of life. Even if sometimes we do have to judge and place limits when other people become a danger. This is how we embrace all things. In one of Suzuki Roshi's talks, he explained that Buddha was not changed after his enlightenment. I remember when I first came to practice so many years ago, when all of us were so new and so starry-eyed and excited, we believed that this experience or this thing called enlightenment would give us a trouble-free life, a peaceful life with nothing to worry about. But Suzuki Roshi explained to us that Buddha's enlightenment or his wisdom did not free him from his karmic life. He was still a human being. He remained just like we are. And he suffered from the events that took place in his day. His vision stayed firm. It was not shaky. He was committed to watching his life and everyone's life. After his enlightenment, his wisdom experience, he did not hesitate to continue his practice. So Suzuki Roshi was talking about the Buddha when he refers to he and him and his, but I am sure he was also talking about himself. He was expressing his understanding. He knew himself and he trusted his true nature. He had confidence in the validity of his own practice and of the life he had chosen. He encouraged us to do the same. As he often did, Suzuki Roshi was telling us, this is what Buddha did. Pay attention. And if you had known Suzuki Roshi personally, you would know this is how he lived. So we should follow his way. Let's follow his way and trust in our own true nature and see our activity as Buddha's activity and embrace our life and trust our life and the lives of others without judging too much. Thank you. I invite questions or comments. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Les.
Hi.
Hi. I had a question, I guess related to, interactions with others, or I guess presumably when there might be a conflict or a disagreement with others, is that if, being in human form, if a person, is maybe aggressive or intrudes upon your space or your duties in some way, if you don't act and intervene in that situation, that person will not get the signal that they need to stop doing what they're doing. And so, how would you recommend to proceed when, if that person is basically doing something that is harming your, the person over here?
Usually, what happens in a situation like that, the first thing that comes to our mind, being human, is, oh, she's wrong, I'm right. It's the first thing that happens. This is what human beings do. You hear somebody say something, and immediately your mind says, oh, that's way off, that's wrong. I've got to correct her. That never resolves anything. It starts an argument, never resolves anything. So our practice is not about, it doesn't start with who is right and who is wrong. We don't start there. We start with acknowledging the other person. In some way. Instead of responding with, you know, I don't agree with you or you're all wrong, which only antagonizes and creates a separation. Best if we don't take it personally and say, well, that's interesting. Can we talk some more about that? That's one way of acknowledging another person, which is, you know, a positive vibe. It's positive. Oh, that's interesting. We don't have to say, I agree, but we should also avoid saying, I disagree right then. Just, oh, that's interesting. I never heard of that. Or can we talk about that some more? I believe that's the starting point. So it's our relationship with this other person who may be saying something that could be harmful, could be disruptive. We start with acknowledging their presence. And then we try to discover what's a good way to talk about our differing beliefs and how we could come together and find common ground. That's what makes this practice so difficult for most people. The instinctive tendency to think, I'm always in a war, and I always have to win. That's why many people have a hard time getting involved in the practice. It's against what they've always done and against what they've been taught to believe. But in our practice, we start with concern for the other person. Concern for the person. Not for what they believe, but concern for them. That's easier said than done, especially these days in the political climate that we have. That's not so easy. But in our practice, that's where we start. We have to hear the other person. Where are they coming from? How can I make this a good relationship? That's the starting point, I think. Thank you. I don't know if that's taking place right now in the debate. I think it's more like this. The political debate that's going on. Oh, Dave?
I personally have been going through a situation with a family member whose views differ quite a bit from mine. And I know that I should do what you've described, but hearing you say it will just drive that point home and help me to remember the next time he sort of throws something in my face to try to turn it into a constructive conversation instead of just throwing something back at him. So thank you for that.
Hi, Les. It's Leni.
Hey, Leni.
My question is, you said to care for the other person. I find that if I'm in a situation that's testing my patience, I often have to pay attention to me too, to calm myself down, to notice whatever fear or anxiety is coming up. So aren't we caring for both people? Or everybody in the space?
Sure, of course. Of course. taking care of others is the same thing as taking care of ourselves. If we, you know, relate with each other with patience and kindness, we feel good. If we resort to criticism and anger, we don't feel so good. So it makes sense to be nice.
Hi, Russ.
Hi, Diane.
Nice to see you. Thank you for your talk. I've been driving on 101 a lot lately, and what you're describing, I feel so petty that I could take a complete stranger who I don't even know, who either cuts me off or speeds up or does something that annoys me on the freeway, and I actually take it personally. How could that person do that? So it's everywhere, I think, in our interactions, and it's just a matter of thinking about it. And I'm so glad that you reminded us that if we just stop and think and take a deep breath, which I did on the way down here tonight when someone cut in front of me and didn't signal, it just drives me crazy when they do that, when they don't signal. So anyway, I try to anticipate when someone's trying to get into the lane in front of me and try to be generous and try to be kind. I mean, we can practice this in little micro ways. And then when something big happens, maybe it'll help us to get through the bigger things that go on. But my first tendency is just to go, you know, I could just explode.
Okay.
Is that that's our basic human nature and not our true nature, right?
I think our practice begins with driving in the slow lane.
I like that. Yes.
Drive in the slow lane and don't tailgate. Be very happy.
Good one. Thank you.
Hernan.
Hi, Les. Good to see you. Thank you very much for your talk. It's very important for everyday life to remember it. And I would like to ask you one question and also make a comment. The question is, what do you think is the role also in this of trying to control things and control people? Suzuki Roshi tell this story about, I don't remember if it was a sheep or cows, but that the best way to control them was to remove the fences. Maybe we tend to put fences. And one comment as an experience, when I was in Alabama, we met a family. And when we were in Alabama, we met a family, and they think politically completely opposite to what I was thinking. So we talk about that. We never got argumentative or was always respectful, but I was judgmental. I mean, I saw, this person, what they think is crazy or is wrong, without thinking much about it. Then little by little, his daughter that was classmate with our youngest daughter, because they were classmates, they started inviting us to go on boat rides. They invited us to dinner. Then they started inviting my daughter to several things. And they are one of the warmest and friendliest people that I have met in my life. And I think that nobody else beside being relative, has been had taken care of our daughter as them. And now we go to their homes and the political aspect disappeared. I mean, it doesn't matter, it's irrelevant. One that the this commonality came, the differences were away.
What do you feel about that experience?
I learned about something that I think I may have learned. One was how naturally I judged based on ideas and not based on the person. That was one learning. And the other learning is that we may think different, but there's something much more powerful that is our commonality. That we are humans and there's a sense of connection. If we drop the differences, we see the connect. I mean, we see what is common about us, and our commonality is much bigger than the differences. It's deeper.
Yeah.
And the difference can come and go, but the commonality is there.
Yes.
Stays there. And was a beautiful thing. Now we visit each other, we have good times. And
good. That's good.
That was nice. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
They put a message in the chat about the cows.
About the cows.
It says, the second half of raising cows is to give them a large field and then watch them very carefully.
Hmm.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's kanndo.org.